So welcome back from the break. Before I introduce our next speaker, I want to take just a minute to thank you all very much for attending this workshop. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Ashley Slagle, and I am a member of the SEALD staff at the FDA, and I also serve as the Clinical Outcome Assessment Qualification Scientific Coordinator. And I'm also privileged to be one of the co-chairs of this meeting and this morning's moderator. So I'm really thrilled to see what a great turnout we've had for this meeting, and I really appreciate the PRO Consortium being willing to allow more participants here than we had originally planned. And I think the interest in this meeting really speaks to the success that we've had in prior meetings of this type, and I hope that we can use this meeting to continue that success by sharing ideas, identifying challenges, brainstorming some solutions and opportunities, and really just generally working together to continue to improve the inclusion of the patient voice in drug development. So now, I am extremely pleased to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Chavre Buckman. Dr. Buckman is the director of the Office of Translational Sciences at the FDA, and she is responsible for coordinating the critical path initiatives for CDER and is integral to the drug development tool qualification program. It's a real pleasure to have her here again this year. And for those of you who attended last year, you know that Dr. Buckman was not planning to attend this year unless she had some good news to share with us. So I think we can assume that there's some good news. Welcome, Dr. Buckman.
Hi, good morning. And Ashley is right that I said that I would not be coming back to do a Groundhog Day unless we had good news. So I'm excited to share some important updates with you. So before I get started, I just want to thank the organizers. I know this is our fifth time around, and I think I've been here pretty much since the inception. I'm very excited to see that, you know, it's kind of a sellout crowd and that folks are very energized and excited about what we're doing together. And so what I want to do today is really give you a kind of the 50,000 foot view, tell you a little bit about broader what we're doing with the DDT qualification efforts, and make sure everyone's on the same page in terms of where we're trying to go and how we're moving forward. I see a lot of familiar faces in the audience, and I hope to give enough time so that if folks have a few questions or things that come up, I know we're a little pressed for time, and I know I stand between you all in the next session and lunch, so I'll try and accelerate the discussion. So, when I was here last year, I really spoke a lot about some of the challenges that we heard from you all in terms of the qualification process, challenges around how do we build efficiency, challenges around communication, how we work together more effectively, and challenges around the feedback and starting to see what, at the end of the day, are the deliverables that make us really want to move forward on this. And I'm happy to say that we've made progress. And just to remind you, the qualification programs, it's not just one program. We have clinical outcome assessments, we have biomarkers, and we have animal models under the animal rules. So I'm going to give you updates on all of these areas. Just to remind you, the CDER structure, and to remind you that these different programs are being run out of different offices within CDER. So we have here the Office of New Drugs, which runs the Clinical Outcomes Assessment Qualification Program, and very excited to see Sandy Queter and John Jenkins here today. This is tremendous to have them with you guys, and so take advantage of that. Ask questions. Bring up your concerns. We have the Biomarker Qualification Program that's run out of the Office of Translational Sciences. And then we have the Animal Model Qualification Program that's run out of the Office of Counterterrorism and Emergency Coordination. So it's important to know that even though we have these three components, they're united by this overall guidance. So telling you what kind of progress we've made. When I came to you last year, I said, we need to get this guidance finalized, and we've done that. In January of this year, we finalized the drug development tool guidance. Just a reminder that this is a process-related guidance. It does not describe evidentiary standards. We would like to get to that point. We are not ready for that yet because we have to get more experience. And remember, as I said, this qualification process describes a unified process for biomarkers, animal models, and the clinical outcome assessments. Also, you may not know that CDRH has come out with a medical device development tool qualification program as well. Their draft came out in November of 2013, so now we have a process and we've been working very collaboratively with them for looking at medical device development tools. So this is huge, and it's showing that more of the agency is starting to align along this qualification concept for development tools. We also have updated our qualification website, and as you can see, we have areas where we focus on animal models, biomarkers, and clinical outcome assessments. This is your best point of reference when you're trying to determine what's new, what's been qualified, what are we thinking, how are we moving forward in some of these areas, what is our best information about letters of intent and things of that sort, what does the process look like. This is kept up to date. Our last update was just a couple of months ago, I believe. So we really do a great job of trying to keep this up, and we encourage you to look, give us feedback, tell us what's missing, and help us to make sure that this is the best source of information possible. We've also spent a lot of time thinking about this concept of context of use, or when we talk about COAs, fitness for purpose. As you know, one of our biggest challenges is making sure that any drug development tool has a context of use that fits the need, because that will drive the level of evidence that's necessary. And so we spend a lot of time up front trying to articulate how is this tool going to be utilized, and then what is the level of evidence that's necessary to move forward. So we've spent a lot of time, even in the biomarker space, trying to understand what does this look like, what would a use statement look like, what are the conditions of qualified use. We've even put up on the website examples of what this may look like so that people get a better understanding, because we realize this is an area where people who are working on these drug development tools get caught up and have challenges. So I encourage you to look at that as well. Now, for COA qualification, Ashley Slagle is going to talk with you in a lot more depth about what we're doing to try and streamline the process. As you know, we had our first COA qualified in January 2014, which is huge because we have a positive thing to say about how we're moving forward. This is for the exact PRO. As I said, the final DDT qualification guidance was published early this year. We have 30 plus COA projects across various stages of the qualification process, with more that are on the horizon. And we've revised the process now to allow for earlier qualification and increased efficiency, and Ashley's going to talk to you about some of those areas. We also have new communication tools that are online, that's wheel and spokes and roadmap diagrams that Ashley will talk to you about as well. This is an example of the first page of this attachment to the guidance on the qualification process for drug development tools for the exact PRO. This is for measurement of symptoms of acute bacterial exacerbation of chronic bronchitis in patients with COPD. This was a tremendous lift, a tremendous amount of work from the folks both internally taking a look at that qualification review, as well as our external partners who brought this forward, so we're very excited to see this. This just shows you the breadth of some of the COA qualification efforts that are underway. This is a wide variety of conditions, but they're not limited to the ones that you see in the slide. We're constantly asking for, you know, more ideas in terms of where we need to focus our efforts. We're partnering with multiple consortia, patient groups, academics, researchers, and others on COA qualification projects. As you can see, we have a variety that are going forward with you guys. We also are working with a foundation for the NIH with their biomarkers consortium. We're working with a coalition against major diseases, the Critical Path Institute's multiple sclerosis outcome assessment consortium, PROOF-C, which is a cancer fatigue consortium, as well as Aging in Motion, which is a patient advocacy organization. So there's a breadth of activities that we're engaged in now with this overarching umbrella of looking at qualification. We're also actively collaborating with NIH to explore potential qualifications of selected promise measures. And we're continuing to encourage that instrument development qualification, particularly in pediatric populations, rare diseases, and areas of unmet need. So we want to see those, and we want to see your ideas come forward. Even if they're still nascent, we want to have those conversations with you to determine how we might be able to move forward in these areas. Now I'm going to switch gears a little bit and tell you a bit about the other programs, because I think sometimes we focus so much on one area that we don't see the breadth of what's going on. So we are also shepherding the biomarker qualification efforts. And just to show you where we are, we have 43 projects right now that are in the initiation stage, meaning that we've either received a letter of intent or we have some input from the outside in terms of their interest in moving forward. We have 28 projects that are in the consultation and advice stage, and we have 3 that are in the final stage, which is the review stage. Just to give you an idea of the breadth of the types of categories of BQ submissions, you can see that we have about 29% that are focused on clinical patient selection. We have 14% looking at clinical efficacy response, about 29% focusing on clinical safety, 3% looking at clinical patient compliance, and then about 25% looking at preclinical safety. So you can see the breadth of the types of qualification efforts that we're engaged in right now. This just shows you the list of FDA-qualified biomarkers to date. I'm hopeful that by next year, before next year, I will have more on this list to tell you about. Again, I will not come back if I don't have positive things to share, but this shows you the progress thus far. The animal model qualification effort, and this is led by the Office of Counterterrorism and Emergency Coordination. They have three projects that they've received a letter of intent for. They have 5 total that are in the initiation stage. They have 2 that are in the consultation and advice stage. And right now, they have none that are in the review stage as yet. Now, when we talk about pathways to facilitate integration of drug development tools into our processes, there are a variety of different ways we have those conversations. Of course, the traditional way is through the IND, NDA, BLA review route. As we know, we're emerging to have those conversations within the qualification route. There's also a new component that we're bringing forward, which is called the CPIM, which are the Critical Path Innovation Meetings. And the goal of these meetings are to foster efficient and innovative methods of drug development. So this actually spurred from a conversation that Dr. Woodcock and a variety of stakeholders had probably 2 Decembers ago, where they came to us and said, we want to have earlier conversations with you all. We want to make sure we understand that we're moving down the right path very early, before we're even ready for a submission. And so the idea is to promote that understanding of challenges in drug development, innovative strategies to address them. Some areas that we're able to address through this pathway are potential biomarkers that are not ready yet for a DDT qualification program. We look at natural history study designs and implementation, emerging technologies or new uses of existing technologies, novel clinical trial designs and methods. And the whole idea of this concept is it's a conversation. It is non-binding. There's no advice on specific approval pathways. It is a scientific conversation for us to have that interaction to determine what are possible pathways forward. And in many cases, they engender more collaboration. And because FDA has a unique purview of being able to see the breadth of activities that are going on, oftentimes it can point folks who come to that meeting to the right next step, possibly engaging them in a particular consortia or engaging them in a public workshop or things of that sort that may help us move forward. So we're very excited to be rolling out this program, and you will see in the coming months guidance that will be out on this and things of that sort. There's another proposal. I'm giving you the 50,000-foot view of what we're working on. Another proposal that's in the works that we're focusing on, which is a training consortium. Some of you may look at this and say, why are you doing this? Well, the challenge is we see that there are a lot of folks that right now are in academia, that are in industry, that in many cases do not have the exposure to regulatory science. They don't understand what we do. They don't understand the bar. They don't understand, in some cases, what the level of evidence we need to be able to move forward in certain areas. And so the idea is to develop a training consortium with a neutral third-party convener. And the concept is really to, much like the PRO consortium and other consortia, to really focus, however, with a coordinating committee that focuses on curriculum development, academic exchange, sabbaticals, as well as fellowships. So the idea is, how do we give people that are earlier in their careers exposure to the regulatory science arena so that they really understand what does it take, what is it necessary to be able to move this drug development field forward. One of the areas that will be underneath this umbrella that we're very excited about that we've just launched within the last 2 months with the Reagan-Udall Foundation, which is a foundation for FDA, is an Alzheimer's disease regulatory science fellowship. This is for a fellow that comes in and works with us, embedded with the review division for up to 2 years, focused on Alzheimer's disease activity. So I know you guys are focused on clinical outcome assessments, but if you know anyone who might be appropriate for a fellowship of this sort, please get in contact with the Reagan-Udall Foundation and let us know. We're really trying to focus on dynamic, innovative ways to bring in the right talent and the right expertise and work with various stakeholders to really understand what is necessary to move this drug development paradigm forward. So next steps in terms of what we're doing overall, we are developing internal CDER maps, and they are both general and program specific, and those are underway as we speak. We are continuing to streamline programs to build review efficiency for these qualification review tools. We are continuing to clarify this concept of context of use or fitness for purpose, as I've said, because it drives the level of evidence that's needed. We're evolving the concept of expanding qualification over time as evidence increases. So the concept of narrowing your context of use, narrowing your fitness for purpose, so that we first get a level of evidence that we feel comfortable with, and then over time expanding that to expand the qualification determination. The challenge is, if we set the bar so high for qualification, it makes it very hard for people to reach that bar. So we're revising our thinking in terms of how do we narrow that context of use or that fitness for purpose to get us what we need to get to the first hurdle. And Ashley will talk to you a bit more about that concept when she speaks with you. We are also actively working with our international colleagues on templates for letters of intent. We realize and we hear from you, you don't want to have to reinvent the wheel 3 times with 3 different submissions for the same thing. We are working very actively with our colleagues at EMA, as well as other organizations, to determine how we can harmonize those templates so that we get it right the first time and it saves you all time and energy. We've heard you, we're working on that. So in summary, I think we have a lot of exciting things going on. I do want to mention one other hot off the press. I just got an email this morning about this before I close. We have been working with an organization called Faster Cures, and they are in the process of developing what's called a consortiopedia concept. And that idea is, as you see with the patient-reported outcomes consortium and the myriad of other consortia that CDER works with, there can be challenges in terms of, especially in the international arena, overlapping agendas. We want to make sure that we're coordinating efforts so that we all know what each other is doing, that we can work and harmonize together a lot much more effectively. So this consortiopedia concept that they're going to be coming forward with this year is really a way, it's almost like a yellow pages. It's a way of identifying what's going on with these different consortia. What are they producing? How can we work more efficiently together? How do we make sure that we're not duplicating efforts? And so we're very excited. I just got an email this morning that they're moving forward with this. I pitched this idea in Brussels last March, and they took it up, and they're moving forward. So I'm very excited because I think that this will help us to bridge a lot of these collaborative efforts more internationally and really leverage a lot of the efforts that you and others are tremendous in helping us achieve. So this is my contact information. We're very excited to be partnering with you on this. As I've been here for 5 years, my interest in this has not waned. We're happy to hear your ideas, your questions, and I'll stop now and maybe take a couple of questions if people have any. Thank you. None. Yes. All right.
Well, they have your contact.
Yes. Yes, you can. We actually answer emails and calls. So if you have questions, let us know. Thank you all.
Thank you very much, Dr. Buckman. I think that was a great overview of where we've been, what we're doing, and where we hope to go, and it is an exciting time.